WTY America presents Crosstalk, a nationwide call-in program discussing issues that have an effect on our families, our communities, our churches, our nation, and our world. Crosstalk, an opportunity for you to voice your concerns for biblical principles. And now live by satellite and around the world on the internet at vcyamerica.org. Here is today's Crosstalk.
We do thank you for joining us on Crosstalk here on VCY America. Ladies and gentlemen, we've been seeing a lot of terms, a lot of promises flowing freely from the lips of politicians, and they all sound so good. I mean, we're hearing about health care for all, Medicare for all, child care for all, college for all, and also on the lips of some is housing for all. Is there a tie with these promises and proposals to socialism? What about their connection to Agenda 21, Agenda 2030? Well, we're going to delve into it today. Joining us, we welcome back Tom DeWeese. Tom is president of American Policy Center. He's one of the nation's leading advocates of individual liberty, free enterprise, private property rights, personal privacy, back-to-basics education, and American sovereignty, and independence in protecting our constitutionally guaranteed rights. He's a former newspaper editor. He's also author of Sustainable, The War on Free Enterprise, Private Property, and Individuals, and also Erase. It's a political novel. Tom, welcome back here to Crosstalk.
It's good to be with you, Jim. Thank you.
I do want to say here at the outset of the interview that this term housing for all has really been magnified and promoted by Bernie Sanders, who's making another bid for the presidency. This program today is going to be addressing that matter, these policy matters. I do want to say, though, that this morning, Bernie Sanders' campaign announced that Senator Sanders underwent a heart procedure after doctors discovered artery blockage. He had experienced chest pains, had two stents successfully inserted. He has canceled his campaign events through the next few days, at least. And we do encourage you, listeners, to be praying for him, his physical health. I'd like to talk about not that aspect is not a direct attack upon his physical self. Rather, we're talking about this policy, this concept of housing for all, which promises what is termed affordable housing, Tom, for all Americans. What are your thoughts on that?
Oh, Jim, this is just covering everything that government's going to provide.
Mm-hmm.
What Bernie Sanders says in here, in talking about this, is that there's no place in America where a full-time minimum wage worker can afford a decent two-bedroom apartment. What's left out of this are several things. One is that as we are building all of these apartment buildings around the country, the government is raising taxes on the property owner. They're raising the cost of building materials to be environmentally correct, not to mention the higher and higher taxes coming out of your wages. You pull all that together, and yeah, people on minimum wage can't afford a two-bedroom apartment. So whose fault is that? And it's bad government policy is the reason for it.
Mm-hmm.
But what he wants to do is put more bad government policy in place, so it gets worse.
We're going to delve into various aspects of this, and one of this is the price tag. And, Tom, I was just doing some searches here before the program. I saw the price tag for Medicare for all. I saw estimates ranging from $28 trillion to $50 trillion. College for all, $70 billion per year. Daycare for all, another $1.7 billion. The Green New Deal, from $52 trillion to $93 trillion over a 10-year period. And according to the Western Journal, this would cost $1.48 trillion, this housing for all, over a decade to produce 7.5 million housing units, which she said would be affordable forever. Then there's another $400 billion to be used to build 2 million mixed-income social housing units, which would help desegregate and integrate communities. Then there's another $410 billion for Section 8 rental assistance for the poor, and on top of that, another $32 billion to end homelessness. And often tied with this, Tom, we hear the terms, well, we got to make the rich pay their fair share. Our printing presses, frankly, can't run fast enough for all of this.
Senator Everett Dirksen famously said one time, a billion here, a billion there, pretty soon you're talking about some real money.
Yeah.
Now we've got a speech impediment, and we put a T in there instead of a B.
Yeah.
They have no concept of what they're talking about here. And, people ask all the time, how does a country like Venezuela, go into such poverty so rapidly and in such chaos? Listen to this. This is exactly how it happens. This is absolutely bankrupting a country. There is no way to keep that up. And the bottom line to it all is the very people that they're saying they're trying to help are the ones who are going to suffer the most. We've had all of this government housing through HUD and other agencies for decades, supposedly to help the poor, to have a standard of living and so forth. And in almost every case that I've seen, particularly in the larger cities, these have become crime-infested ghettos where people are afraid to live. They're afraid to go outside and so forth. And so they've created this situation. What I have found in all the years that I've been working to defend private property rights is that people who own their property take much better care of it and control the situation in it because it's theirs. They have a stake in it. When government is doing it, all we're talking about here is a bureaucrat signing a piece of paper. As long as he gets the form signed, everything's cool. And they're not watching what is happening there. They're not watching the safety of the people and the upgrade of the facility and so forth. And so they become this mess that we have. And now we're moving to, after they've created this mess, now they're looking longingly at these nice single-family home neighborhoods and saying, well, that's not fair that those people have that while these people have to live in what we created over here. So let's bring out what we created here into those neighborhoods, and everyone will be just fine.
Tom, do you see this housing for all as a direct attack on personal property rights?
Oh, absolutely. Property? Absolutely, because when, that's what they do. They begin to take away the private property to make room for this. This is what we're seeing, eminent domain, the creation of these smart growth cities where, they sit in representatives are sitting in meetings with non-governmental organizations, planners, federal agents, and they're all mapping out the community, and they're saying, well, over here we can build all this. And what they're saying now is exactly what we're talking about here, how we build low-income housing in these neighborhoods to make everything equal and better, and we have these grants to spend and so forth. And when they use eminent domain, private property is thrown out the window. They'll just take it.
Wow. Tom DeWeese is with us today, president of American Policy Center. And, Tom, as we see this, I mean, we're talking about absolute government control, and there's got to be a connection between this and Agenda 2030, Agenda 21. What's that connection?
Well, the connection is that Agenda 21 is an absolute assault on private property. They say that private property is should not be allowed because it divides the people. Only some people can have private property and benefit from it, and others can't. So therefore, we shouldn't have that. And several of the people said we don't believe in private property. People who are promoting these things, and that's exactly mm-hmm. part of the agenda. And about a year and a half ago, HUD came out with a new program called Small Area Fair Market Rents. And what they said in here is locating Section 8 recipients into upscale zip codes by increasing their voucher values. They say the agency believes the current residents' success will transfer to the newcomers. I had a gentleman in the state of Virginia in the government who's in charge of programs like this literally sit there and say to me and some other people in our meeting that he fully believed that if you brought low-income people into high-income neighborhoods, that they would achieve better because as they were watching the people in with the higher incomes getting up and going to work on Monday morning, that would give them incentive to do the same thing.
Especially when they're getting it for free.
Exactly. That is just ludicrous. This is the kind of thinking that we're dealing with here. It's pie in the sky, happy, happy, happy. That doesn't work. And everything that does work, they will tax it to death until it doesn't.
Mm-hmm.
So there you are.
Explain what they mean when he says help desegregate and integrate communities. I mean, on its face, it may sound good, but what is really meant by that?
Well, it means what they believe is that the people living in the upscale neighborhoods are all rich white people, and that's racist. This has literally been said by the mayor of Minneapolis, that these people living in single-family neighborhoods have self-segregated themselves to stay away from the people they don't want to live next to, and that's racist. The state of Oregon has finally passed a law to outlaw single-family neighborhoods, calling it a housing crisis, and we've got to take care of this. This is what they believe. And, you know, this is the same people who believe that people in poor neighborhoods, people, you know, black community and so forth, you know, they can't have access to ID, so they can have an ID to go in and vote and so forth. They have these misconceptions of, you know, who is where and who is what. And anything that's, you know, rich and nice and everything, well, that's racist and that's just white people and all the poor people can't have that and so forth. This is the mentality we're dealing with. It's not true. And what these people need is an opportunity. And when you start raising the minimum wage, as Bernie wants us to do, and then you're taking the very people you're supposedly trying to help, and they're losing their jobs. What these guys don't understand is that private businesses are not government entities. They don't have this unlimited amount of tax dollars coming in to help them go. A businessman has taken the steps, the risk, to try to build a business, and he's got to compete. He's got to have a product. He's, you know, he needs people to work for him, but he's only got so much money available to him. He can't create it out of nowhere. He doesn't have his own printing presses. And so when they come along and start demanding that you are, you know, poor guy is dumb enough to start his own business, we're going to make him pay for that stupid decision by making him pay higher wages, higher taxes, more costs on his products and so forth, which again puts him out of business, or at least he can't hire more people. This is the mentality we're dealing with all the way around.
So if we go ahead with a program like Bernie is proposing here and the trillions of dollars, will this do away with all homelessness?
Nope. It's going to create more. You know, and take a look at the state of Oregon, which has been putting a whole lot of these plans in place. And now they're declaring they have a housing crisis. What they did in Oregon, they put these urban growth boundaries around the cities. They've done this all over the country, but that was where they started. Portland, Oregon was a poster child for it. And they put these urban growth boundaries around and said, well, to protect the environment, of course, that's the excuse for everything, protect the environment, we need that wildlands area out there, and so we'll not allow the community to grow out there. Well, 20 years ago, they started doing this. In that 20 years, the population of Oregon has grown by 80%. They have only pushed back the urban growth boundary by about 6%. There is no room for housing there. So suddenly they have a housing crisis, and now the government is in a panic over what can we do to solve the housing crisis that they created with their own stupid programs. And the solution? We're gonna ban single-family homes.
Tom, let's pick up with that right after the break. Amazing, folks. I mean, this housing for all is actually an attack upon personal property rights, your private property rights here across the nation. We'll be back with more discussion with Tom DeWeese following the break. This is Crosstalk on VCY America.
Back to Genesis with Dr. John Morris, author and seminar speaker with the Institute for Creation Research. Dr. Morris, where did the idea come from that there were little green men who lived on Mars?
Chris, the idea that there was intelligent life on Mars was given a big boost in the late 19th century when the American astronomer Percival Lowell claimed that he saw linear features on Mars, which he claimed were canals. Later, it became obvious that the Martian atmosphere could not support advanced forms of life, so they've given up the idea. What they haven't given up is the idea that there might be microbes on Mars, single-cell life. This idea is fueling the modern expeditions to Mars to find water. The idea is if they can find water, then maybe there's life. But while water is a necessary condition for life, it's not sufficient. Life is much too complex to have formed haphazardly. It needs a lot more than water. NASA could save a lot of money by going back to Genesis for their starting point.
Thank you, Dr. John. This is Chris O'Brien. Thanks for tuning in.
You're listening to Crosstalk on VCY America. Tom DeWeese is with us today. He's president of American Policy Center. Their website, AmericanPolicy.org, AmericanPolicy.org. We're discussing this concept of housing for all. I mean, it just fits into the plan of all the other alls we've heard of, you know, the Medicare for all or health care for all, child care for all, the college for all. I understand New Mexico is going that direction now as well, the college for all. And now also is housing for all, but this having a direct attack upon personal property rights, private property rights. Tom, you were giving us the illustration of what's going on in Oregon right now with the urban growth boundaries. That break kind of caught us in the middle of that discussion, so go ahead and pick up where you left off.
Yeah, well, where you put these urban growth boundaries in, you have now created an artificial shortage of land, because they have designated this land's going to be for something else. We can't use it for any of this stuff, any housing, building, and that kind of thing. And you know, we don't want any strip malls to be built there and so forth. So now you've created a situation where, first of all, with a shortage of housing or a shortage of land, that makes housing costs go up. It's artificial, but when, you know, that's the way the market works. If you got a shortage of it, it costs more. And if you block any kind of, you know, building stores and things like that, now you've cut off the ability to have a job. That's how you build an economy, is you create these things.
Mm-hmm.
And so everything comes down to that. There is no money to do these things, and the urban growth boundaries create that shortage, and now all of a sudden everybody who's done this is crying they have a housing shortage. They created it. That's where it comes from.
Now, coupled with this, there's this another initiative underway called Nationwide Rent Control. That would limit rent increases to, I've seen some limited to 3% or 1.5 times the consumer price index. They're calling it rent control. That ties into this as well, doesn't it?
Well, absolutely. And that's the next, little block, the knife to fall here, is because when they, first of all, through all these other policies as we're discussing, they are causing the cost of housing to go up. The cost of property, the cost of building, and, you take a city like Los Angeles, other cities, where they have put massive taxes on the landlords, private landlords who have taken the risk to build these apartment buildings, and now they're suffering from all of these higher costs. So what do? They do what they have to do. They raise the rents in order to pay for all that. Now they're saying, well, that's not fair to make these people pay these kind of rents. We're going to put rent control on. You can only charge this much. Where that's going to go is private landowners are going to disappear. Eventually, step by step by step, we're eliminating single-family homes. We're eliminating private owners of apartment buildings and so forth. What's the alternative? It is all housing will be government housing. So now go into those neighborhoods where that exists now and see what your future is, because it all becomes the same.
Wow. And yet the guise of which this is presented is, hey, this is going to protect tenants. This is something that's going to, take care of the homeless issue. This is something that's going to solve the problems that we have here as a nation. And it's going to give you that, that rent control guarantee. It's going to protect the tenants there, but it is actually going to shackle them.
If all that is true, then why don't they start with the public housing they already have, we're already paying for, and make it into what they say it will be in these other places? The big issue that just came up last month about the city of Baltimore, where the ghettos there are growing in massive amounts of trash. Volunteers went in there and cleaned up the trash, tons of trash that they cleaned up there. Well, why wasn't the city doing that anyway?
Mm-hmm.
Why is it you have these tent cities in Los Angeles and everywhere in San Francisco, everywhere you look are piles and piles of trash? Why aren't they at least cleaning that up? They've got a rat infestation. They've got the plague starting to come out of it. And if they're so concerned about all these people, Why isn't that a focus? It's not. Because those kind of things are done by people who have a stake in the property, and the government doesn't. The government is just, making these rules and regulations to get elected, and the result, you see it right in front of you, so you don't even have to debate it. It's right there. So clean that up first.
Yeah, it's very interesting. And when you look at Bernie Sanders' proposal here on the housing for all, there's a very small section, but it has huge, huge significance, Tom. And it's a section called Decarbonize Our Housing. He said, we will pass a Green New Deal to achieve 100% sustainable energy for electricity and a fully decarbonized building sector by no later than 2030, decarbonize our housing.
Yeah. This, again, this goes to getting rid of all the energy that we have today that we're creating and using what they call environmentally correct, the windmills and the solar panels and so forth that don't work. That's the problem. They don't work. Maybe someday in the future some things will be developed to where it could handle all that, but it doesn't now. And California is on its way to a massive collapse as they have passed regulations that they're going to end any kind of coal and gas and so forth, to create the energy, and only go to wind and solar. And what you will see in the future as this begins to take place are massive shortages of energy. And here they are building all these high rises. So you're up there in the middle of, the top of the high rise, and they're going to start having energy curfews. Like at night, they will shut down all the energy. There won't be street lights. There won't be an ability to have a third shift on the factory. Stores will have to close and so forth because there's not enough energy. And if you're stuck up there, you're going to have to walk down the steps or walk up the steps to get to your place. This is where we're headed with this for no reason at all except for a political agenda that has no scientific basis to it, has no reason to it, and should never even be considered.
And what's interesting is that one of the key words that you have mentioned so many times on interviews we've conducted with you, Tom, is the word sustainable. And you find that throughout his document as well, especially that of what they call expanding sustainable home ownership.
Yeah, sustainable, sustainable, sustainable. One of the things in the Green New Deal, they talked about it as it was introduced, that we needed to tear down every home in America and rebuild them to make sure they are all sustainable, that they are all protecting energy use, having so that they can have all their windmills and their, their solar panels. And there actually is something that's being done by this right now. It's called form-based codes. And cities are beginning to implement these plans. You can look in your own comprehensive plan and see if it's there. Form-based codes are literally making it so every house in the country, every building in the country looks alike. They have, they have certain formats of how much energy they can use, and they have it all designed that how you'll, sustain that. And you see it starting to happen already. But again, that's where the trillions of dollars come from. Just rebuild every home in America.
This
is where they're going. Yeah.
One of the things that we need to also point out, Tom, is that this is not an isolated issue all by itself on this little island. We have talked about things like the war on beef that is going on. We've talked about the smart meters. We've talked about so many different issues as it relates to Agenda 2030 and Agenda 21 first come out. But all of these are not separate islands. They are all connected together.
Yes, it's step by step by step, because the first thing people start to ask when you come up with these grandiose plans is, well, how do you do that? And all those things you described is exactly that. The whole sustainable development scam that we are dealing with, everything sustainable, 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 is all based on some of the advocates will tell you truthfully, you all have to learn to live on less. That's the mantra, learn to live on less. And I just saw a little newscast a few minutes ago where they were saying, well, that's what we're just going to have to learn to do. And of course, I keep saying, why?
Mm-hmm.
And this because of rules and regulations that make no sense at all, like the urban growth boundaries, like the controls on building codes and things like that. And what gets me about this, Jim, is everywhere you go, every city you go into, every comprehensive plan, everywhere in the world is exactly the same.
Yeah.
Exactly the same language. And, yet, you will hear your city councilman say, this is local, we developed this here just for our situation. And that is just not true. The exact plans everywhere, because all of this is driven by, in this country, by the federal grants from HUD, Department of Transportation, EPA, others that are dictating, if you take this money, here's what you have to do. And every single one of these issues we're dealing with, whether it's energy use, the roundabouts in the city, the bike lanes, all those things, have their own NGO organization that is an expert in that issue. They know how to present it. They know how to apply for the grant for it, bring it all in there. And your city councilmen, county commissioners are surrounded by these guys who are pushing these programs on them. And this is how they do it, step by step.
Now, there's another aspect to this, too, and I know we're tired of hearing about this climate change and global climate crisis, et cetera, but just a couple weeks ago, here we have Bernie Sanders again talking about the millions and millions and millions of people going to be dispossessed by climate change, and the U.S. needs to welcome them. Now, here he's talking about the housing crisis we have, the homelessness that's going on, and then here just a couple of weeks ago, he's talking about bringing millions and millions and millions of people, what do they call them, climate refugees, here into the United States?
Yeah. Here we have Al Gore has been predicting these disasters for 30 years. He said the United States was going to have to, I guess maybe even the world, has gone through a wrenching transformation in order to put these things in place. Well, he's right about that, but every prediction he's ever made has never come true. There is no country that is, no island that has been, buried under the sea after this. There is no shortage of oil. There's no shortage of coal. There's no shortage of, and we actually don't have an overpopulation problem either. Where we have teeming overpopulation problems are in countries that are dictatorships, where the people are not allowed to own private property, are not allowed to build their own private businesses, are not allowed to have a life of their own. The government dictates every single aspect of the economy, and so they have this teeming poverty, and appears as an overpopulation problem, but it's really a poverty problem. We don't have that here, but we will, as they are putting the exact same programs in place to make it so.
Tom DeWeese is with us today. His website, AmericanPolicy.org. We'll talk more about that right after the break. But I'd like you to get on board, listeners, with your comments, brief comments or questions that you would have for Tom today. This housing for all, it's very, very much connected with Agenda 2030, flows out of Agenda 21, and is a direct attack upon personal property rights. Private property rights here across this nation. Again, our number to Crosstalk, 800-733-9829. Back in 1 minute, you're listening to Crosstalk on the VCY America Network.
From the invention of writing, this world has been mostly ruled by kings. Power which concentrates into the hands of one person often rewards his friends, though, and punishes his enemies. The King of England was the most powerful king this planet had seen. So when Americans got the chance, they set up a government as far from a king as possible. A republic where the people are king, ruling through their representatives. How do republics rise and fall? How did 45 countries fall to communist dictators? Are these tactics used in America today? These and other issues are addressed in the book, Who is the King in America? By William Federer. This book provides the reader with an overview of 6,000 years of history and why America is unique. Discover the keys to preserving the freedoms of America's Republic. Who is the King in America? It's available for a donation of $18 or more. Ask for it when you call 1-800-729-9829. That's 1-800-729-9829.
You're listening to Crosstalk on VCY America. Tom DeWeese with us. He is president of American Policy Center. Folks, he's been on this battle a long time, and he's been informing you a long time on this issue. Tom, you've got just a ton of information that's available to our listeners on this and just so many other issues. I know we had big response as well to the program you did with us on the attack on the beef industry that is going on across this nation. But AmericanPolicy.org is your site. Tell us what our listeners can find there.
Yeah, we have a lot of articles on there. We've got a very large archive of articles we've written over more than a decade on there on a whole bunch of these issues. You can see some of the background, where it came from, and then new things coming out. And we have really, I'm an activist, and I hear the people, you know, their frustration about how to fight back against these things. What do we do? What do we do? And so I have really made it a goal in our efforts to provide the tools that people need. And so we've got, you'll find things on there. My book, you mentioned Sustainable, is on there. And I wrote it as a handbook for activists to have the background, who the players are, what the game is, you know, what the programs are, and then what to do about it. And so that has that, and we have several other things that kind of lead that same direction.
AmericanPolicy.org. Lines are packed. Let's go to Lat in Racine, Wisconsin. You're on the air, Lat.
Yeah, hi, Jim. Hi, Tom. The question I have is, I don't know who I would talk to, but I have 45 acres in northern Wisconsin. We use it for hunting. And the problem we're having, we have a partial, it's considered like a wetland. We have a 10-acre swamp on our property, and we wanted to upgrade it and, you know, put in different culvert systems and make it better for the animals. And at every aspect, we're always being battled by the county and the state, and they won't let us do anything with our own property. I almost think it seems like the government is trying to make it so miserable that we'll just get rid of our land, sell it, and be done with it so they can control us. So who would I talk to about trying to make my land better for the animals on there? And I'll take my question off here. Thank you, Tom.
Thank you, Len.
That's a very good question. I mean, here is the, you know, the wetlands issue has been a major tool for those who are working to get people off the land, take their land, and, you know, I could go into a whole bunch of stories on things they made up to be wetlands, and here you are trying to improve it so it is better all the way around, and, no, you can't do that. And, you know, the sorry part is that any government official that you go to try to do something about this is just going to say, well, you know, there's nothing I can do. There's a regulation in place. This is the way it is, and there's nothing to do about it. In this particular kind of a case, the first thing that I can tell you that you need to do is make noise, and that you're trying to do something to help the animals. Well, maybe you can recruit some of the folks who are you know, real animal lovers that are always trying to move on improving things for animals, and get them behind you. One of the things they can't stand is a bright spotlight put on what they're doing. And you know, let me ask you, if I can, is it the county that is telling you can't do this?
I believe he said it was okay. Hanging up to hear the
okay,
answer, but
right.
I believe he said the county and the state.
Okay, particularly if the county, get a bunch of people to go to the county commission meeting. And really make some noise and make your case about what it is you're trying to do, that this thing is a hazard and you're trying to make it better for the animals as well as for yourself, and make them own the issue. This is a major issue, is a major point that I'm making across the country now, is make these guys own the issue. And if they're blocking things, put their picture on a handout and say, why is Commissioner so-and-so blocking this or doing that? You've got to make them feel pain. We can't move forward.
Thank you for the call, Lat. Pastor Mark in Missouri, you're on the air.
You know, I wanted to talk about one thing and then mention another, and I'll try to do it quickly, but Tom was talking about they were going to spend trillions of dollars. If you laid a dollar bill down one every second to lay down $1 trillion, one bill, $1 bill every second, it'd take you just almost 32,000 years. That's how massive a trillion is. 32,000 years to count to a trillion. That's ridiculous. You know, I taught theology. I helped establish a Bible college right after the walls came down in the early 90s. in the former Soviet Union, and the same communist leaders were in government control after communism had supposedly fallen. But when we went into major cities, there was sustainable development everywhere. Old, dirty apartments, the elevators didn't work. All of the apartments were on top of each other. I mean, extremely high apartments, and they were all just not built well. So the heat went on. It would be really cold, and the heat wouldn't go on until a certain time because everybody's heat went on the same time because of the government control. And so everyone there made $200 a month. A doctor made $200 a month, and a street cleaner made $200 a month. So there was no motivation for anybody to be a doctor. Life was like a third world poverty-stricken country, and people stood in line to get cabbages from a cabbage truck. So this is what sustainable development becomes. This is what communism and socialism brings. And we better wake up. We as a country better wake up. Thank you.
Thank you, Pastor Mark.
Absolutely true, and that's exactly where it's headed. They're, all those things you mentioned, they're already moving to do here, that everybody gets the same income, and we have control over the farmers, and all of a sudden we have a huge shortage. And I forgive me, Jim, if I've used this before, but it is very appropriate right here. You go to your city council, and you hear them talking about these programs and why we need to put these in place, and you will hear them talking about, well, we've got to make sure that we don't have a chaotic growth in the future, that we've got everything under well control. See, is this, I'm going to give you a quote. This doesn't sound familiar. The chaotic growth of cities will be replaced by a dynamic system of urban settlement. The region is formed by the economic interdependence of its development, that the industrial complex to the industrial region. The region has a single system of transportation, a centralized administration, and a united system of education and research. That was written in 1968 by a Soviet Russian architect called named Alexei Gutanov in a document called the Ideal Communist City, and that's exactly what we're doing in our city councils right now.
Wow. Wayne is calling from Gregory, South Dakota. Wayne, you're on the air.
Hi, thank you. I thought I'd call in and add my perspective to your conversation. I'm a lifelong farmer and rancher. My family's been here since 1904, and what's going on in agriculture right now is a massive transfer of wealth from the country out here into corporate America. And for instance, one example, as a cow-calf operator, a lending institution has said that their figures show that the average cattleman is losing approximately $100 on every calf we sell in the winter. And the beef packers are making, on the average, and of course, keep in mind, we have a year's worth of investment of labor and financial investment in that cow.
Mm-hmm.
And then when that calf finally gets to the packers, they have ownership for 2 days. And while we lose $100 a head for that year investment in labor, in 2 days' time, they have a net profit, record net profit right now, for 2 days' ownership of approximately $773.
Wow. Wow.
So while we're losing equity, a lot of us are losing, basically, I think, I don't know, I mean, too many farmers and ranchers aren't losing equity right now.
Mm-hmm.
They're making record profits. And it seems to me it's just a shift away from the private enterprise of farming and ranching to the corporate model of food production, where the American people will be soon, not much of a choice where their food comes from. And in the meantime, right now in agriculture, there's a lot of really tough financial times for most people.
Yeah.
And I just thought I'd call in and add that to your conversation.
Wayne, thank you for that perspective there. I appreciate that so much. And, Tom, I'm going to have you comment on this because, I mean, I'm talking to you from the dairy state, and we are seeing the family farms, milking farms that are closing by the hundreds. You know, we're seeing that spread all across the state, and we're seeing this in the conglomeration of large, you know, enterprises and corporations to bring about this, and he's seeing it there on the beef side as well.
Absolutely. This is what is happening is the environmental movement, particularly the World Wildlife Federation, which has said that one of the main ways to save the earth is to stop beef consumption. Somehow, some way, these guys have worked their way in to where they are now literally controlling the beef industry in this country. They've created the Global Roundtable for Sustainable Beef. They've put all these rules and regulations on about how much of your grazing land you can use to graze the beef. So that cuts down on what you can do, cuts back on your herd, all kinds of regulations on how you raise the beef and so forth, which makes it much more expensive. That's why you're losing the money on it. And then there are four packers in this country. There is Cargill, there's Tyson's Food, there's JBS, and a fourth one. And they control the market. And they are, one of the first things they've done with this roundtable is they have removed the country of origin labeling. And so now we don't know where the beef is coming from. They're getting it cheaper in Brazil, in China, other places that is not raised with the quality of American beef. And the next thing you're starting to see is tainted beef on the shelves. And people are now afraid to buy beef, so that cuts back on the market. And meanwhile, as you say, the packers are stacking their pockets with their money, but the American beef industry is starting to die through all this. And one of the things we're working on, I've got a national alert just ready to come out this week that is asking people to call the White House and demand that the Department of Agriculture put the country of origin labeling back on the packaging so people know they're getting American beef, and that'll help raise the price of beef.
So if people are on your email list, they will get that alert.
Yeah, we'll send it out to the media, too, so you'll see it.
So friends, to receive that alert firsthand, you can go to AmericanPolicy.org, sign up for their email alert system there, and you'll be a recipient when that does come out. By the way, you can go back to CrosstalkAmerica.com. Tom and I did a full program on the growing push to destroy the beef industry on June 17th. You'll find it there. You can download it, listen to it free there online. Let's go to Roy calling from Arizona. Roy, you're on the air.
Thank you. If they do some research on global warming, and they would look at global axis, that determines what our weather conditions are. There's no way we can ever change it. No matter what they do, it'll never change. And all they've got to do is simple research on that. I was taught that back in the 60s and the 70s in high school and in grade school.
Yeah.
That, of course, they do not teach anymore today.
Yeah, it's cyclical. Thank you, Roy, for that. Tom, we see weather patterns. We talk about right now, you know, we got some high temperatures going out in the western or the eastern part of the United States where record rainfall happening here. But sometimes they say, oh, we might break a 100-year-old record. Guess what? That means that it was, you know, we went through this, you know, 100 years ago, too.
Absolutely. It is cyclical, and it is natural. And CO2 does not cause global warming. And we've now got hundreds of thousands of scientists who are coming out saying they are not finding any kind of climate emergency. They're not finding anything here that's telling them that this, any of this is true. The science is certainly not settled that global warming exists.
And yet this Housing for All uses this global warming and global climate change as part of their basis. We'll be back with more of your calls. Our number to Crosstalk, 800-733-9829. Tom DeWeese with us from the American Policy Center. We'll be right back.
For the Worldview Week in Minute, I'm Brandon House. Our website's worldviewradio.com. One survey after another is showing that young people today want to live under socialism. The question is why? One of the reasons is a lack of education. They have not been taught what socialism really is and how it will really end. History is littered with the philosophies of Karl Marx, i.e. socialism, being worked out. It always ends badly. And yet, many have never been taught this. What they've been given is a lot of lofty platitudes, common good, social justice, shared community. They don't understand the evils of socialism, communism, fascism, Marxism. Ronald Reagan, in his farewell address, pleaded with Americans to preserve America through an informed patriotism. Our young people need that, and it includes Economics 101.
You're listening to Crosstalk on BCY America. Tom DeWeese with us, American Policy Center, their website, AmericanPolicy.org. Phone lines are packed again, so let's go right back to the callers. Next in line, Beth in West Allis, Wisconsin, you're on the air.
Yes, I have two quick points. One about the subsidized housing, to back up your guest and what he's talking about, and I don't think people realize how severe this is. Know a man who has a house which is under the subsidized housing. He says he gets $1,000 a month for this house for a rent, of which $800 is paid by the taxpayer and $200 by the people that originally rented the house. However, what happened there was a couple not married, then the girlfriend left, and now there's three other people. So there's four people in the house, and he says that they can't even come up between the four of them for the $200. I say, good luck getting them out of that house.
Hmm.
Secondly, you know, when you're talking about all these rules and regulations, do you think for 1 minute, I mean, stop and take a moment here, the ruling elite are going to be living in these housing projects and stuff? They're going to be abiding by the same rules they put upon us? Are you kidding me?
Oh. Thank you, Beth, for raising that. Tom, your comment.
I'm really glad you brought that up, because you take a look at the rich, particularly let's take Hollywood, where we're, you know, really promoting all these things. Barbara Streisand has 5 estates, and she only lives in one at a time. Has she ever opened the doors to allow all these people she's concerned about to live there? No. When they got rich, they got rich through a free market system, and they put the money in their pocket. Did they give it all out to, you know, if they make $5 million and making a movie, do they say, oh, no, I can't take that much. We can have more people. We'll pay more people on the, you know, give more jobs. You know, no, they don't. It's theirs. So they are supporters of private property, and they are supporters of a free market, except for you and me. This is what we deal with these people.
Yeah, and we go around in our big, huge jets, talking about how others need to reduce their carbon footprint. Let's go next to Brad. Brad, you're on the air.
Hey, brother Jim. About 40 years ago, I went out to L.A. I was in the Santa Monica area and visiting some people about my age, and they were talking about the high cost of rent, and they were glad they had rent control. And then they turned around and complained that there wasn't enough rental properties for them to avoid being on a waiting list for one. It was hard to get in. I said, well, look, these renters don't want to deal with the government telling them what they do, what to do, so they don't rent their stuff out. That's why you have a shortage.
Yeah.
And the other thing is, it's going to be just, if this happens, it's going to be just like Congress. Remember when Congress was telling us, oh, don't worry, we'll have Obamacare for our health insurance, too.
Exemption.
I guess that didn't really pan out, did it?
No.
I mean, it's not all these nice upscale areas that are targeted for low and mixed income housing are not going to affect the lefty politicians and the lefty activists at all.
Yeah. Thank you, Brad. Tom, your response.
Well, you know, we're dealing with people with a mentality of a 5-year-old who is saying, I want, I want, I want, I want. And when reality sets in for what they want, then that's not fair. You know, this is what we're dealing with.
Yep.
They don't want to hear any facts. It's just they feel this is the way it should be. And somehow, some way, we've got to move beyond somebody's feelings and get into reality.
Let's pick up Brian, Rochester, Minnesota. Brian, you're on the air.
Yeah, thanks for taking my call. I really appreciate this program today. It just makes me think of the farmers and stuff and, you know, how important they are. And I'm becoming a Christian, you know. I know I have a responsibility to pray, and also I need to take action, too. So it makes me, I'm a truck driver, you know, and I've noticed the farms that have died, and it just breaks my heart. So, you know, I know that's just one piece of the elephant of the pie, but, yeah, it just breaks my heart to see that happen. So I'd like to do more to help, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So,
thank you, Brian. Appreciate your call.
Thank you.
Tom, let me, we're down to just less than 3 minutes here. I'd like you to bring to the attention of our listeners something that you told me about here a short time ago called Envision Centers. What is this all about?
This is a new program coming out of HUD, and unfortunately out of, you know, Dr. Carson's situation here. But the Envision Centers, this is what they say here, will provide communities with a centralized hub for support in the following four pillars: economic empowerment, education advancement, health and wellness, and character and leadership.
Mm. Is that what housing and urban development is about? Is this character leadership?
Yeah, so, I mean, and you go through this, and you think, what are they talking about? And again, partnering with these public-private organizations, public-private partnerships, and these NGO organizations who are making this stuff up as they go, and approach education in non-traditional ways. Well, we already did that. You know, it's called Common Core, and we now have a whole generation of little communists coming out of school. So apparently, what we really need is traditional education on this. But it's just gibberish. It makes no sense in what they're talking about here. But this is a new program that Secretary Carson is promoting in Vision Centers that we're going to really focus on this stuff now. There's no solution in it. It's all one-sided answers, and it's basically double and newspeak.
Wow. And I see the first one opened, I believe, in Detroit, and I guess that should speak for itself.
There you go.
Tom, we're down to a minute here, but the topic seems so overwhelming. We see these huge programs, United Nations, and you know, its implementation, all of this. You have always advised work on the local level.
Absolutely. I believe it all works from the bottom up. Obviously, these programs, these funds and stuff are coming from federal grants and so forth, but it's your local elected officials, your city council and your county commissioners, where you can get in front of and you can make them feel an impact. This is exactly what the other side has done. They understand that. They've surrounded them, and we aren't there. And if we can just focus on property rights, if you just focused on that, and you could get legislation and get comprehensive plans that defend property rights, you are beginning to make headway forward, and then you can begin to work on other things. And so that's what I do across the country, is teach people how to do that.
Tom DeWeese, our guest here today, and Tom, stay on the line here for just a moment after our theme closes. AmericanPolicy.org is a website, folks, AmericanPolicy.org. And again, you'll find a lot of material there on, number one, being informed. So how can you detect these things going on in your community? Planning commissions, public-private partnerships, smart meters, smart growth, all of these things, you'll find it there on the site, AmericanPolicy.org. You can also sign up for his email alerts as well. Our time is gone. Thanks for joining us today on Crosstalk.
You've been listening to Crosstalk via satellite and the Internet from VCY America. Views expressed may or may not be those of this station. For a CD of today's program, send a donation of $6 or more to VCY Tape Ministry, 3434 West Kilbourne Avenue, Milwaukee, Wisconsin, 53208. Or download by RSS or podcast from crosstalkamerica.com. And join us again for Crosstalk.